Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 47, and it's Titans Week. And the Steelers are early this week. They'll play tomorrow night, a Thursday night at Heinz Field. I'm not sure which one's which, but it's an 8:25, 8:20 kickoff, something like that. As the Steelers back with a conference game against the AFC South for the second week in a row. Obviously an important game for the Titans. And Dave, an important game for the Steelers here as they get home. It's five of the next seven are at home and a chance. You know, we've talked about how mathematically it looks like the Steelers have, you know, more or less locked up the AFC North. But, you know, one more win out of the division here, and they're really going to set themselves up, you know, regardless of what happens the rest of the way, to be in a great spot, to just kind of close things out and put themselves in a position for home field advantage.
Boy, they should if they don't make the tournament now, something's gone horribly, horribly wrong for sure. And I was just kind of looking ahead, which I shouldn't, at the schedule earlier this morning. And you know that that Week 14 game against the Ravens in Pittsburgh, if the Steelers, you know, if things go right and the Steelers win that game, they could probably clinch the AFC North with three games remaining in the season. Now it had to be kind of the perfect scenario there with some Baltimore maybe losing the next couple of games there. Look, it's possible, and by week 15, you would think, you know, the Steelers would have had the AFC North locked up at that point. And then, of course, that Week 15 game is against the New England Patriots. So, we're most definitely going to learn a lot about this team. But just as the Steelers do, you know, you have to look at this quarter by quarter of the season. It's all fun to look ahead. I know a lot of people are anticipating that Patriots game, and a lot of people look at every game the Steelers play right now and say, yeah, but if we played the Patriots, this or that would happen. I don't think you can do that because, I mean, that game's still several weeks away. So much can happen with both these teams over the course of the next 4 weeks or so. Injuries. Look, the Steelers still aren't playing their best football either. We would hope that they would start maybe peaking a little bit more, even on both sides of the football. So, yeah, in short, it's a great day to be alive if you're a Steelers fan.
Yeah, Thursday night games. Look, we mentioned this the other day, and I'll just pop off on it one more time. Ross Tucker, who is a guy who played in the league, he's in the media now. He's a Princeton grad. I've always got a little bit of a soft spot for guys who made it to the NFL out of the Ivy League. Look, I wouldn't say the guy's controversial, but he's a guy who's opinionated, and that tends to make, when you're smart and opinionated, that tends to make for a reasonable media personality. He put an article on sportsonearth.com in defense of Thursday night football. And, you know, he opens the article citing Richie Incognito and the comments from a bunch of the Seahawks, Doug Baldwin, after Richard Sherman got hurt, saying, you know, it should be illegal because players' bodies can't recover. And then he goes on to talk about his experience, saying not all players dislike playing on Thursday. He talks about the time off and the extra weekend, the fact that there is no evidence playing on Thursday causes more injuries. The players are paid handsomely for the Thursday appearance. And just to understand the economics of it, CBS and NBC pay a combined $450 million per season for the Thursday night package. Amazon pays an additional $50 million to stream the games. That's $50 million of broadcast revenue. The players get 55% of that toward the salary cap number. That's $275 million. And that, if you just want to look at it on a per player basis, this isn't exactly the right way to look at it. but it's, you know, $150,000 per player if you're looking at kind of a 55 to 60 man roster around the NFL. So, you know, when guys talk about one time a year not wanting to play on Thursday night, you ask them about, you know, you put it in terms, financial terms like that, and all of a sudden, I think, you know, you might have a different perspective on it. So the whole, you know, the games aren't good type of stuff. Well, you can kind of throw that out as well. I mean, you look at two of the best games in the whole NFL season, the Rams and 49ers in week three, 41-39, the Raiders and the Chiefs in week seven, 31-30. The Eagles and the Panthers, 28-23 in week six. There have been very good games on Thursday night. Sure, there have been some stinkers, but every weekend you get some bad games. So just the idea that this is somebody threw out there that, you know, the owners are, you know, basically, I can't remember the exact term they used, Dave, but it was something along the lines of just completely taking advantage of the players. They're not. Just flat out, they're not. The players are in this. They get paid handsomely for this, and again, you know, a team does it once a year. If you put it down to a vote with the money on the, you know, if you put it down to a vote with no consequences, sure, nobody wants to play on Thursday. Put it down to a vote with consequences of significant dollars, guys are playing once a week on Thursday.
Let me just go on record, if I haven't already. I'm not a huge Ross Tucker fan. He knows me as Bipolar Dave from Florida. when I used to call in on his serious show, and I think the last after I pretty much caught him with his pants down back when, you know, Steelers signed Marquise Pouncey to that long deal and had it out with him on air during one of those segments on Sirius. And since then, I don't even think they'll let me back on the show after that. But I did read his comments there, and yeah, I mean, he makes some very good points. Some of these players, just because they're former players, doesn't make them great analysts. Okay, but you know, on certain topics such as that, you know, where they're, you know, they've lived it, they've been in the locker rooms, they know how other players feel. You know, I think it's good perspective there. In general, though, I'm not a huge fan of Ross Tucker, but I do respect his thoughts on that. And, you know, as I said, my own selfish reasons, I talked about this on a radio interview yesterday, David. You know, my own selfish reasons, I love Thursday night football.
Sure.
But I do understand why probably, and I don't know for sure. I mean, I don't know what the latest polls are or whatnot. You would think most of the NFL players do not care for it. They do it because they have to do it. Now, is there any way in the future when this new CBA comes along that they're able to somehow structure Thursday night games maybe starting in the bye weeks, and then in other words, each team plays a Thursday night game coming off their bye week or something like that. Is that a possibility?
Right, and that's, you know, something that I'm sure they work at, and obviously with you know 16-17 weeks and buys coming at different times and having to do things, they're not going to be able to do that for every team. But I'm sure they try to do some of these things, and some teams are disadvantaged versus others in terms of how it all works out. But, you know, again, it's a financial thing, and at the end of the day, for one time a year, teams having to do this, you know, doesn't seem like that big a deal. I mean, obviously, you know, we've seen this Thursday night football for Thanksgiving for, you know, as long as we've been watching football, and it's something that the Lions relish and the Cowboys have relished and other teams have relished the opportunity to host games on Thursday, and we'll have it again this coming, you know, next Thursday with Thanksgiving. So, you know, I don't want to say it's not a big deal, but I do want to say that I don't think the facts are honestly presented by players when they're just, you know, throwing stuff out there that, you know, you see a guy like Richard Sherman get hurt in an Achilles injury, which, my goodness, we've seen Achilles injuries, you know, happen to players in the summer, in non-contact, all these different types of things. There's no evidence that playing on Thursday night caused Richard Sherman's Achilles to rupture in that game. So, okay, enough of that.
Boy, but
injury report.
The long before we get to the Steelers injury report, did you read the long laundry list of injuries that came out of that game between the Seahawks?
Oh, the Seahawks. The Seahawks, you know, just
and,
crazy.
And the Cardinals too. You know, they lost a starting. I think they had four or five guys on their side of the football that got kind of extended injuries on top of there. I mean, that was one of those. You know, it wasn't so much a hard hitting game as it was. You know, I don't want to call it the body bag game or anything like that. But a lot of players left that field injured, and I think a lot of them are going to miss some games as a result of it.
No doubt about that. Okay, so the Steelers injury report, Dave. It's we're looking, you know. Okay, so the go ahead. Why don't you fire away with the? We obviously know Joe Hayden's out. We heard the comments from Tomlin about him. We know that Vance McDonald at this point looks a little bit unlikely, and the question marks around Mike Mitchell. And again, you know, to me, unlikely, but you know, always players say they're going to play. So, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it just goes back kind of to what Mike Tomlin, I think, said on Monday. Is probably maybe the hint that we need, saying the guys that limped out of the stadium will have a hard time, you know, on the short week. I mean, that's a common sense thing to say, but when you figure that, well, we already know Joe Hayden's not going to play, so that's one. Mike Mitchell with an ankle injury, especially coming off of you know, whatever, Achilles or calf, whatever you want to term that thing. Man, I mean, he was limited again on Tuesday. We'll see what happens Wednesday. It could go either way with him. I don't know which way to guess on this. I think Robert Golden's played decent in his absence, so why not let Mike Mitchell get healthy in this game? You know, I'm a big proponent of Mike Mitchell and his communication and all, but if he's not 100%. Or 90% even, don't put him out there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on the Wednesday final injury report with Mike Mitchell. Vance McDonald, you know, just because he returned to that game against the Colts, you have to wonder how that thing swelled up pretty good. He was, of course, in a boot immediately after the game, stayed in that boot as of Tuesday, did not practice. Man, you know, short week, and you want to talk about one guy you wish could be on the field. What, you know, that's one guy in general that, man, this guy just seems every other week to be bitten with something, some kind of minor injury, and it sure would be able to get him back full time. James Harrison is the other one in that back, limited on Tuesday. One has to think, David, that he's not going to play this week. I still think this is a bullshit injury with him. Pardon my French, but we'll see. But look, if you look at the at the possible inactive list, David, who knows? Maybe James Harrison just has to dress, even though he's probably not going to play, for the sheer fact that they might have, you know, too many on the inactive list. You know, Mike Mitchell, Hayden, maybe McDonald. Those are possibly three injured inactive players there. You, of course, have Joshua Dobbs. You would think maybe Daniel McCullers is down. Hawkins. And maybe even Filer are down. So you can get to seven real quick if you have three injured players in there. So I don't know which way I'm leaning on this, even if James Harris.
I would say this might be a game where McCullers, if it comes down to an extra guy, McCullers might get a helmet in this one. If it comes down to who you're thinking about, look for Daniel McCullers maybe to get one.
Right, and he might not even play a snap in a game. You know,
right?
He might be maybe out there on the field goal block team, and God forbid you have to get into a goal to go situation. Maybe you put him in there in the goal line package. But and I threw that kind of question out there on Twitter last night, David. You know, who would you dress? You know, Daniel McCullers for the possibility of maybe two goal line snaps, or James Harrison for the possibility of zero snaps. You know. So I think we'll get a little bit more information to play into this guessing game later on Wednesday when the Steelers release their final injury report. Once again, I think of all these guys, I mean, Mike Mitchell, for obvious reasons, a starter, and along with Joe Hayden being possibly or most definitely going to be down, I just wish they could get Vance McDonald healthy again. And speaking of Vance McDonald, did you read anything into Vance McDonald and Xavier Grimble both being out there on the field for the first play against the Colts? I don't think that's something you and I addressed the other day.
No, I didn't read anything into it. It was a specific play, and as everybody knows, you know, these 10 to 15 first plays are scripted. So what we've seen, and this is what a good offensive coordinator will do. It is not unique to Todd Haley. Basically every offensive coordinator in the league does this. They will show in their first 10 or 15 plays as many different combinations, packages as possible to see how the defense reacts to it. And then as they have the opportunity to then look and see what the defense reacts to and how the defense goes about their own personnel groupings versus what you're showing, then figure out where they feel like they might have an advantage. So just coming out, you know, we've seen them oftentimes this year come out, you know, the guys who start the games, it's a meaningless stat in football, starts. It's not like being a Major League Baseball player where you're in for the game or you're a starting pitcher. You start a football game, it might be a play or two. Grimble, I think, played four plays in this game. So I just think they wanted to run a play. They obviously wanted to run it on a first down, so I didn't see anything significant to it.
Let me ask you this, David. And look, I mean, we've had some offseason discussions about Xavier Grimble and not living kind of, you know, up to some of the media hype from, you know, a year and a half or whatever ago. Jesse James, though, what are your overarching thoughts right now on Jesse James?
I don't think they're strongly different than they have been in the past. I mean, we talked about Jesse taking his rookie year maybe being a little bit more of a contributor than anticipated, taking a bit of a step forward in his second year. I've never looked at Jesse James as, and I don't think anybody who follows the Steelers has, so I'm not putting a straw man out there. He's never going to be Heath Miller. He's not nearly as good a blocker. He's not as good a receiver. He is, you know, I think ideally Jesse James is a good number two tight end. And look, he's not a great blocker, but he has blocked well at times. He's not a great receiver, but he can catch the ball most of the time. So, you know, Jesse James is just a guy. He got drafted in the fifth round for a reason. He's a big guy at 6'7". He's not doesn't have great speed, and he doesn't have a lot of bulk. Matt Spaeth was 6'7". Matt Spaeth was not a pass-catching tight end. He was a very good blocker. James isn't that. He's a better receiver than Spaeth. So he is, you know, he is what he is. I think we've seen kind of where Jesse James is. I don't think he's going to continue to take steps forward. He's going to miss blocks. He's going to miss plays. He's going to drop some balls. He's a competent number two tight end in the NFL. And the Steelers don't really have a it's their weakest position in the offense. So, you know, he and McDonald are, you know, basically it's a co-position.
I think he's regressed in his blocking this year, David. I got to be honest with you. I think he's regressed. Not that he was overly great, but I thought that maybe last year he made some steps forward, and now it looks like he's regressed some. I guess what I'm getting at is, I mean, he's a number two flat out, okay? So, and I've been pushing for this for a little while and kind of led up to it with my earlier comments right now about McDonald. It'd be nice to get McDonald on the field more or healthy, because at this point is the point of the season, he should be in tune with what's going on offensively now. On top of it, he's a far superior blocker than Jesse James, and plus he can give you more of a stretch the field type of tight end as well. And you know, I'll put it to you this way: it did not hurt my feelings to see McDonald and Grimble on the field together to open that game. I'm not sure if there was a message there. I'm not as confident as you are that there wasn't some sort of message there, but it would not hurt my feelings to see maybe a little more of that moving forward, because I think we've seen at the few snaps that Grimble has been on the field this year that his blocking has kind of improved some. So, straight out, I'd like to see them use McDonald more, and you know the Steelers are going to have an interesting. Is this a position, the tight end position, the Steelers should address possibly early in the first couple of rounds of the draft?
Certainly, it's on the table for sure. When you think about, look, they'll continue to draft offensive linemen in the middle rounds going forward. They will continue to draft wide receivers here in the middle rounds going forward. I don't know what they're going to do at the quarterback or running back position, But if you look at the, as I say, the biggest weakness, it's clearly at tight end. So, you know, if you were assuming, you know, depending on what happens with Ben and Le'Veon Bell, it could be the highest priority on offense.
Are you, I mean, McDonald's under contract. I mean, are you fine with him returning? Are you going to allow him to return?
I expect all three of them to be back at camp next year.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's not a horrible number with McDonald, but it's definitely one that you would expect him to play the lion's share of the snaps with, you know. So it'll be interesting to see what happens during the rest of this. Make no mistake, with McDonald, this is a big final half of the season for him, I think, and I think the Steelers as well, as far as evaluating him. I think his future will be decided in these final, you know, in the second half of the season here. And I mean, he's got the ability to be, you know, one of their, or to be their best all around tight end on the roster. We just need to see it more, because remember back to Ladarius Green last year, David, how the second half of the season, boy, wasn't it fun to start use him in a few different ways and stretch the field. And here we are in the second half of the season now, and you would hope and think that McDonald could be a similar type player, obviously probably not as athletic, but a better blocker than Green. Now is the time to, in my opinion, to find out if McDonald can be that kind of Ladarius Green couple of game, you know, success guy that the Steelers had last year.
Yeah, I don't think Vance McDonald's ever going to be a clear number one tight end. Look, he was fourth on the 49ers depth chart, where they have a couple guys who can do some things, but you know, he wasn't making a ton of money. He didn't. Look, I think the evaluation's out there for Vance McDonald. He's been in the league long enough that all of a sudden he's not going to make a leap forward to be, you know, a huge offensive threat. He is what he is. So, you know, I don't see it for either guy taking a big step forward here at this point in their careers.
But unfortunately,
not for Grimble either.
But an absolute great, right? You know, assuming he can stay healthy and fantastic. Probably one of the better number two tight ends in the league. Talking about McDonald, right? I mean, if you can keep.
Sure, he has a role. He has a role. He's a very good blocker. I mean, you know, but I, you know, guys like that, they're not. I mean, this is not something unique. I mean, you know, you're not enshrining number two tight ends. So it's, you know, he's just a guy.
Yeah, but the Steelers sure do use a lot of two tight end sets. So.
They do, and that's a fair point. I mean, Grimble. I've been hoping that Grimble would take a step forward. He hasn't done it. You know, we haven't seen it from Jesse James. But you know, I think again, Jesse James, he is what they. When you drafted Jesse James, if you said this is what you were going to get, you'd be fine with that. This is what you expect from a fifth round draft pick. He's been a capable and contributing guy on the team.
The thing is, you would have hoped that all you'd be seeing Jesse is 20 snaps a game at this point, because you have a better option, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's not Jesse James's fault.
No. He's out there doing, you know, he's out there playing the snaps and telling them to play for sure. But and look, they obviously thought Ladarius Green was going to help a lot of those issues. But even Ladarius Green, I mean, he wasn't a blocker. I mean, so you're going to run into some issues with him at some point, some two tight end settings, most definitely. The thing is I think you've got. I think if you marry up a guy like Ladarius and maybe Jesse James, maybe you would get a Vance McDonald, right? So I guess what I'm getting at is I'm getting a little sick of Jesse James. I do think the Steelers probably need to address the tight end position during the draft, kind of high first two or three rounds. And you know, I'd kind of like to see that new tight end and Vance McDonald maybe doing some things on this roster next year. We'll see.
Okay, so let's get back to the, you know, it's not the elephant in the room because it's massively discussed, the Steeler offense. And there was a battle on Twitter yesterday of who took credit for pointing out that the Steelers are one of five teams in the league not to score 30 points. And the other four, I think, have a combined record of something crazy like 7-23. Well, the answer is, who gets credit for that is Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers, the guys who haven't done it. And you know, I got into long debates, as I mentioned on Monday during the game on Sunday, about, you know, Is it Haley? Is it Roethlisberger? You know, who's at fault for all? Everybody's at fault. You know, this is football. You know, it's not like the starting pitcher hanging a curveball, but the closest you're going to get is the quarterback missing a receiver or making a bad decision. And that's why, look, the players on the field get more credit than the coaches, and they deserve it, rightly so. And they obviously should get more of the blame. And the quarterback gets the lion's share of the credit and the blame of the players. And again, that's deserved. If you look at the stats of the quarterbacks, either QBR or passer rating, who are playing well, and the stats of the quarterbacks who are playing poorly, it corresponds pretty closely with the record. And the Steelers have a good record. Ben has been not up to the standards of the numbers he put up in the past, but he hasn't been a disaster. Le'Veon Bell, not up to the standards that he's put up in the past, but he's had some very good games. He's not been a disaster. Antonio Brown, he's been a little bit less of a factor in the past couple games, but certainly still one of the elite, if not the best receiver in the game. The offensive line's been mostly good, but they didn't dominate this past week. So it's an offense that, you know, you're not looking at anybody on the offense except maybe Antonio Brown, who really carried him through most of the first half of the season, Dave, and saying, you know, this guy has been the guy and he's been great. I mean, I think you probably look at DeCastro and you probably look at Antonio Brown as guys who are really, really having outstanding seasons. But the rest of the group, we went through this at the halfway point. Are they exceeding expectations? And the answer is not really. And that gets us to Ben and Todd Haley, and I'll let you tee that up however you like.
Boy, you just want me to go off, aren't you? I mean,
I'm going to let you express your opinion.
I've already done it quite a bit, not only on this show, but on the damn Twitter machine as well, too. Look, I'm tired of hearing, predictable and creativity. 80% of you out there listening to this damn podcast don't even know how to define that, okay? Look, is it all on Ben Roethlisberger? No. And I said the other day, David, you can go through any game that we watch. We could pull out a college game of Division II, David. You and I watch the same game, and we'd probably circle 10, each be able to circle about 10 play calls where we'd question, and we'd probably share probably 7 of those plays. So maybe, you know, in total, maybe 16 plays in total out of every game that we'd be saying, I'm not sure what the offensive coordinator was calling here. Okay. Don't hand me this predictability thing. If they're so damn predictable, they wouldn't move the ball the way they've moved the ball during the first 9 games. There's no awards for lighting it up in offensive statistics. And Todd Haley said as much, you know, during his press conference the other day. The real problem with this offense, first and foremost, the thing that matters the most is they're not scoring enough points. When they get down in that red zone, their red zone and their goal-to-goal situations have been miserable. And Ben Roethlisberger's numbers in that area have been miserable. The offensive line has not run good. You know, the creativity and stuff. I'll give you that there are some times where I would even like to see more bunch releases, maybe in the middle of the field, in order to help guys get separation. But let's face it, the Patriots are indeed on another level. Josh McDaniel and what they ask those players to do and read are on a different level than the Steelers. Bill Belichick and that organization does a great job of going out and finding incredibly smart players. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely not, and I don't think anybody in the world can argue that point.
All right, but you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you who's Wonderlick's higher and all. I mean, a lot of these players are better just knowing that. Look, this is what you need to do on this play instead of reading. A lot of what the Patriots do is an if and then situation that the quarterback and the wide receiver and or running back or whatever are all on the same page. And I'm talking, you know, from pre-snap and on, you know, regardless of what there's so much algebra probably involved in that I just don't think that you're going to see that with the Steelers because of the level of trust and competence in the players and the level of football IQ maybe in some others. Take that for how, yeah, I'm sure that'll be taken out of context by several listening to this, but I think you see what I'm getting at here. Now, Are there some instances where you would like to see what they like to do normally, some of these RPOs, some of these other things, where you'd like to see it built onto, maybe with some extra motion or some misdirection? Absolutely. An offense, to say that I'm fine with Todd Haley is kind of a misnomer. I don't think things are going south because of Todd Haley. It is obviously when he's the play caller, you got to put some blame on him. But let's make no mistake, Ben Roethlisberger is the quarterback of this team. Ben Roethlisberger has put up fantastic numbers over remember 6 touchdown games and 500 yard passing performances, David? Those all came under Todd Haley. Ben is not executing consistently enough on a down by down, series by series level, and that's got to slightly get better. And make no mistake about it, we talk about it all season long. The deep ball, that is part of what Ben Roethlisberger does. I made fun of guys like Alex Smith in the past, David, because they throw short of the chains on third down situations there. Ben is not that guy. I don't expect him to become Alex Smith and throw short of the chains and maybe get in a situation where just dump it off. If Antonio breaks a tackle and gets a first down, fine. That's not who Ben is. Ben knows the value of explosive plays. Ben's going to throw for the chains or longer on third down. Sometimes he throws way longer than the chains on third down. I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's who he is. He is still the gunslinger type quarterback, and until he gets more consistent, David, and big emphasis on and this running game gets a little bit better, I think you're going to get exactly what we have had happen here in the first 9 games of the season. I'm about out of breath, and I'll let you comment on what I just said.
Well, look, at the end of the day, the players get most of the credit and the blame, and this offense has not performed to the level that's expected. And if the defense were a defense we saw a couple of years ago, this Steelers team might well be, 3-6 instead of 7-2. But the defense has kept teams under 20 points kind of consistently this season. And they're getting the job done. So I guess the Haley, Roethlisberger, Tomlin, Troika, the question is, are they doing things differently than they've done in the past? And, what are or aren't we seeing? I'll tell you, there are a couple of simple things. One is, I don't know that I think the play calling is particularly imaginative, and I don't know if it's Todd and Ben between them with Mike have decided that they're going to do certain things or they're going to do less of certain things. I continually make the point of using the middle of the field at all three levels, really, but the intermediate middle of the field is not an area where the Steelers attack enough. I don't think they attack the deep ball down the middle of the field nearly enough because some of that may be because, and this is where, the film study comes in, is because teams they realize that is a weapon the Steelers use continually over the years. So obviously it makes sense to play, two high safeties or a high safety deep middle of the field that can help on either side on the deep ball. So, if other teams are taking that away, you have to do different things. So, okay, there's that. Why don't they go for 2-point conversions? Mike Tomlin was all over 2-point conversions in the past. Certainly game situation is part of it, but we've seen the Steelers score first and not do anything. And we've seen the Steelers be in situations identical to seasons in the past where they would go for two, where they haven't done it. So I don't really know kind of what's up with the aggressiveness there. And then, because most of our time and energy has been focused on Le'Veon Bell, on Ben Roethlisberger and Todd Haley, I don't want to leave out the Le'Veon Bell thing. And Le'Veon Bell has been a good, not great back, I think, this season. And again, the concern that I expressed on Monday about his lack of effectiveness in the passing game, if you're a check down dump off, you're not going to be busting things for 15 yards. But we've not seen Le'Veon Bell. I don't have the number in front of me, but on his 40 catches or so this year, he's got I think his average is something in the 5.5 yard neighborhood. I would guess that he probably has only out of 40. I would guess 5 or less of those are for more than kind of 12 to 15 yards. So you know, at times, look, you're just looking to get 5-7 yards on a check down, and that's very useful. But we haven't seen that kind of explosiveness. And we, you know, for the first time, I know a lot of, I've gotten a lot of tweets about it, Dave. I know you have as well. We've seen Le'Veon Bell's not a home run hitter. He's not going to go through the tackles and take it the whole way. He's rarely going to go around the edge and take it the whole way. But he's going to consistently get you yardage, have successful runs, fall forward, do all the good things that a great back does. But we've just not seen kind of maybe that explosiveness or that burst in one-on-one battles that we're used to seeing on from Le'Veon Bell. And I personally, doesn't mean you have to agree, it doesn't have to mean it's right for sure, but I personally do not think it's a workload thing. I'm not sure what it is.
All right, down six. He's averaging 6.3 yards per reception this year so far, David. That's down almost 2 full yards from last year. That, what's 40 times 2, David?
I got it, 80. Yeah.
All right. That's a, it might not sound a lot, but that's almost a full football field, right? I mean, that's one extra drive in there, right? That you're missing there when you start getting in here and playing with some of these hidden stats. His yards per carry this year, 3.8. I got into kind of a mini battle on Twitter on Tuesday. That might come as a shock, but is he a Pro Bowl back just because he's the main guy and he leads the league in rushing yardage? Is that carte blanche? I mean, most touches in the league, most offensive snaps played, leads the league in yardage right now. I think leads the league obviously in total touches, in total yards from scrimmage as well. Can you look past everything else, the lost yardage and all like that, and say slam dunk, Le'Veon Bell is a Pro Bowl back, or is it because, well, who else are you going to put in there in the Pro Bowl?
Well, right. Look, we know Pro Bowl because the players vote. And I'm not suggesting that the Pro Bowl every year should be for a guy who, Joe Thomas, are you going to evaluate, not obviously this year's an exception, is, how much can players, even or media, or even the analyst who watches as much football as anybody? I mean, take a guy like Andy Benoit or guys who try to watch every game. Even our buddy Matt Williamson, who tries to watch every game each week. They're not focused on a specific team. I mean, even they, have difficulty having a sense of, every player at every position. So reputation matters. And I think when you've been to the elite level, like Le'Veon Bell, you'd have to have a lot of guys having great years and have a down year. And Bell's not having a down year to be excluded from that conversation.
All right, let me phrase it better. Is he a first team All Pro right now?
No. And that's when some other things are going to take hold. Now, what's very interesting about this is when you look at the guys who were the front runners in the conversation, you've got one who's not playing this year. In David Johnson, you've got one who's now not going to play most of the second half of the year, at least as things stand this very second, in Ezekiel Elliott. And then, you've got one who's guaranteed to make it if he doesn't fall off the face of the earth in Todd Gurley. So Gurley's going to be a guy. And then it's a question of how do the rookies and the guys who are lesser named guys impact this stuff? Fournette and Kareem Hunt are the two rookies that are obvious. I mean, I think the odds are that Le'Veon Bell will be first team all pro if he has a decent second half. But it'll be open. All pro is always open to discussion. But I will say that I think Le'Veon Bell will for sure be first or second team all pro. He'll have one of the four spots. Will he be deserving of one of the four? The jury's still out there.
Yeah, it's almost, who else, right? I tore Kareem Hunt a new one recently. I'm not convinced I'm not convinced Kareem Hunt deserves the Pro Bowl or and definitely not All Pro right now. I mean, really, what has he done this year?
He's averaging 5.2 yards a carry. His numbers are significantly better than there are lots of ways to look at it. You can't just take the last 3 weeks. You have to take the entire season. So, what he did the first 6 weeks of the season really matters. I mean, so he's having a great year, as a whole.
A couple of big plays. I mean, okay. I see.
But that's like saying Juju take out a couple of big plays and, his season's okay, he didn't do anything the first four games.
Right, right. Juju's at least been more consistent, you know. But look, here's the thing.
But I don't know who are the backs. I mean, does Mark Ingram get in the conversation? I mean, I think Gurley's a given.
What about Shady? What about Shady? You know.
Yeah, he's averaging like Love. He's like 3.8 yards a carry. He's down the list. I don't know who they are though. I don't know. I mean, I think Hunt will be in the conversation. I don't know if Jordan Howard gets in the conversation or Fournette or Ingram. But that, you know, that's a very good question right now. Who will be the all-pro running backs at the end of the year?
Let's see. What is Shady's averaging 3.8 yards per carry, and Le'Veon Bell's averaging 3.8 yards per carry as well. Gurley 4.4. I mean, Gurley's a lock. I mean, Hunt's averaging five.
It's a lock.
Hunt's averaging 5.2. But boy, if you go back and look at the last three or four games, what about it? You know, you mentioned up Mark Ingram. And Leonard Fournette. It'll be interesting to see what Leonard Fournette closes out this season. I think he could be a dark horse.
I think he'll make it if he has a good second half, doesn't get suspended for any games, and stays healthy. I think it'll be Bell, Hunt, Fournette, and Gurley.
Yeah, I mean, really, because there's nobody else, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think Howard has the name recognition or the quality of team. Ingram might sneak in there, but I don't see anybody else in the conversation.
What about Devontae Freeman? Just not enough work there. I mean, he's getting.
Yeah, and he's going to miss this week, right? Again with a concussion, or is he?
Yeah, he only has 116, I think, carries on the season there. But yeah, look, I mean, I all of this stems from me putting on Twitter, David, like five or six guys that I thought were pro worthy of Steelers players that I thought were worthy of Pro Bowl votes, and I left Le'Veon Bell off of that. Really, I did that more because I it's not the Le'Veon Bell that we saw last year. So, that probably has a lot to do with it. Let me tell you this as well, too, David. Last season, Le'Veon Bell had 33 total rushes that resulted in no gains or lost yardage. Now, of course, he missed the first, few games there of the season. But he still ended the season with 33 rushes for no gain or lost yardage. This season, he already has 41 such runs. 41. And somebody asked, well, how many did he have in his first three games? Only 8. He's averaged more of those types of runs in the 6 games since the first three than he did in the first three. So,
well, you know, you put up that the GIF of Jesse James just absolutely whiffing on that first down or second down from the 7 that led to the Vance McDonald touchdown pass, where, you know, it'd be interesting to look at each of those plays and saying how much is a responsibility of Bell, because, you know, that's obviously just one example, and the answer is probably on both sides it's fairly even. But I mean, he's getting contacted 3 yards in the backfield when Jesse missed on that block.
The thing is, and what separates your better backs from your running the mill backs in the NFL is the ability to avoid backs. Stuffs, if you will. You know, okay, you didn't. You only gained 1 yard on 1st and 10, but it stood to be a loss of 4. You see what I'm getting at? There's a lot of hidden yardage there. That yards after first contact and stuff like that, I think, is a very not talked well enough about stat. And if you look at Le'Veon Bell's successful run rate so far this season. Still under 40%. I think it's at 39% right now, and I think it was something like 5 or 6% higher than that last season. All of this goes back into, we can kind of tie this back up in a bow here. There are a lot of reasons why, you know, the Steelers are struggling this year on offense. I think Ben Roethlisberger has a lot to do with it, but I think you have to look at the running game and all these negative yardage, all this negative yardage on the run, and the lowering of the run success rate. All of that's playing a huge factor in it, and I just find it comical that people just say, "Well, let Ben call the plays, and everything will be fine."
Yeah. Okay. So one last thing. By the way, we are going to have our beat writer here coming up in a few minutes. But one last thing. I don't give a damn who Todd Haley was yelling about. I can't even imagine how worked up people have gotten by the whole issue. It's a football sideline. Guys yell all the time. and Haley got a close up on camera. So this has become, you know, what do you say when it's what's the French, you know, the tour de force, or is it, you know, is that the expression? Basically, it's become the raison d'être, the reason for being for some people to, you know, find out who Todd Haley was yelling about. And then what? Okay, so he was yelling at Ben, or he was yelling at Danny Smith. Okay, who cares? Nobody's ever yelled at anybody on a football sideline. This is the most ridiculously not insignificant topic that could be discussed, and that's pretty much all I have to say about it. But, I mean, I just cannot believe that this – it's like the Zapruder tape. You know, what did Haley say, and who was he focusing it on? You know, is there two shooters or one, or who cares?
I find it funny that you're asking me about expressions.
In French.
Yeah, in French, no doubt. And saying, how do you say? That's comical. What is it, a candy camera or something? Yeah. That's like me asking you how to remove a kidney. Yeah, thanks a lot, bud. Set me up there. How do you say? Yeah, those are things that that Dave does not hear often.
with one finger.
Yeah. Okay. I could get
nothing to add to that.
Well, basically, I could give a crap, and I find it funny that it's probably going to ruin, if indeed he was, as reports indicate, he was yelling at Danny Smith, how that's going to ruin a lot of narratives this week.
Yeah, well, they'll bring up the Danny Smith narrative. So, okay, so let's talk about two more things. One, let's talk about the no huddle, and let's talk about special teams before we get to our Titans beat writer. So, no huddle, that was the other thing that I meant to say when we talk about the offense being run a bit differently than it has in the past. The Steelers have not, and you know, I don't have the, again, I don't, this is from the eye test and years of watching. They don't seem to be playing with as much tempo as they have in the past. And we've seen in the past that it feels like when they change tempo, oftentimes the offense plays better. Okay. Am I making things up, or is there any validity to that?
Man, this year we just haven't seen – let me ask you this first. Let me answer your question with a question. Why do you suppose – would you possibly buy into the fact that so many road games and young players or new players have resulted in probably not that much no huddle being run during the first nine games?
Okay, to the young players, no, because there aren't any young players. I mean, Juju's the only young player, and at the beginning of the season, he wasn't even on the field all that much. So, you know, he started the season with Bryant and Rodgers and AB and Jesse James and the offensive line, you know. So, no, I don't think that's the reason. And, you know, even if it's one guy, you know, you just turn and tell him what the play is. When you're moving, if you want to move faster. So, no, I don't buy that one at all. The other one I buy a little bit, although, you know, it's not like when you're playing in Cleveland or even, some of the stadiums that they've played in, Kansas City being the exception, you know, you don't think of them because they were all kind of 1 o'clock Sunday games. You don't think of them as being outrageously loud that they can't be able to communicate quickly. So I give zero credence to the first and a little bit to the second.
All right. They've ran, according to the weight and these numbers I found in the past, just going by play, I haven't pulled from the master sheet. I just did some quick play-by-play scraping here in the detail. 14% no-huddle plays so far this season. 82 total plays.
Okay, go ahead. But Caboli ran this, I think, as well over the last 5 years, and the numbers aren't that different, right? The high and the low is like 12% to 20%?
Yeah, I think he had some wrong numbers in there, by the way. But 14% no huddle this year. Really, if you look at completion percentage, if you look at yards per attempt, quarterback rating, I mean, in fact, the quarterback rating is even lower for no huddle so far this year.
They're very, very similar, though, is your point, right? You put this up yesterday. The data is very similar.
Right. And even when you look at yards per carry, I mean, you know, the few runs that they've had, you know, not, there hasn't been much difference, to be honest with you. And when you go back and look at even let's go back to 2016, they ran 16.2% no huddle. The completion percentage was 2% higher for the quarterbacks that played. I didn't break it down, you know, past then. The yards per carry were actually lower in the no huddle than they were in huddle. So really, you know, I guess it's all about a tempo thing and when you do it, because in the last couple, at least this year and last year, now you could go back to 2015 and see some variances with completion percentage. And once again, though, yards per attempt on runs, better with a huddle than out of huddle. Ben's quarterback's ratings as a whole for the Steelers in 2015 was considerably higher in no huddle, out of huddle. But once again, you're talking about 17.3% of those plays. Well, look, these numbers are just a broad brush look too. So it's hard to look at these raw numbers, in my opinion. I present them as something to look at, but I think you need to dig deeper into them situationally. Okay? Inside 2 minutes, inside 4 minutes kind of thing, maybe to maybe gleam where it's good. The best thing about no huddle, in my opinion, David, is it doesn't give the defense time to substitute, right? So then you're able to maybe have the advantage chess game wise. I mean, look at the Patriots and how they use it. They get a certain, sometimes they'll automatically switch to that no huddle once they get a certain personnel group versus a different personnel group on the field against, so they can start getting some matchups. It's all about matchups anyway, the game of football on a down-by-down basis, whether or not you use huddle or no huddle. In short, Ben Roethlisberger said on when was it, Tuesday, that, look, you know, it's not like we build on anything. It just, being as how we're on a short week here, we're probably not going to put in that much new stuff, if any, that it gives, we can run some of the stuff we've been doing all along and practicing all along that we probably don't normally run in certain situations during other games there. So it will be interesting to see how much no huddle. But once again, here we go, David. How much no huddle do you want to use on a short week period? I mean, coming off of, you know, do you want to wear out your guys?
You know, again, there's a difference between hurry up and no huddle. And no huddle is often, you know, maybe teams are not changing personnel as often this year. So, again, no huddle doesn't have to be fast-paced. You're often, you know, but I do like the pace aspect of that. But that's a fair point, you know, how much you're going to be out there. But here's an interesting stat. The Titans ran 90 offensive play. You think the average number is now 65 to 75. Titans ran 90 offensive plays. And there was some concern among Titans beat writers that the offense might be tired. I'd be more inclined to be worried that the defense would be tired if that were the case, running 90 defensive plays than the offense. Offense always wants the ball. Those guys want to get out there, do their thing. So I don't know if that'll come into play, but it was something that was brought up over the course of the past couple of days. And we aren't going to get, actually, we're not going to get a lot of our opinions in on the Titans. So why don't we just, before we get to our beat writer, is this a good Titans team? I know you've done some work on the film in a short week yourself already. So is this, I'm a bit worried about this game.
Well, look, and I wrote about that 90 plays. I think that 90 plays that offense ran the other day could be a little bit of a factor in this game, David. I wrote about that pretty extensively yesterday. I didn't take the time to research the data on short weeks and teams that, you know, 80 or 90 plays and yada yada. But and look, I mean, who were the guys that were on the field for all 90 plays? The offensive line, right?
Right.
And Mariota. Now, obviously, a lot of your skill guys, your Delanie Walkers, I think a couple of your receivers were out there quite a bit as well, too. I think it's something to watch, and I think it's something for us to good that we noted right now. And then when we get together on Friday, let's go back and say, because
did it matter?
Right, did it matter? And make no mistake, the Steelers' defense against the Steelers defense against the Colts played what 50 what did I write 50 56 snaps or something like that, and really got, you know, only a handful played all of them. And then when you look, I think Cameron Heyman and Stephon Tuitt only played like 48. So I mean, I'll take my chances with five offensive linemen. Well, actually, it's going to be four, because I think they expect to get Quentin Spain back this week, who didn't play the last several weeks. So four of their offensive linemen are coming off of a game where they played 90 snaps. And here we go. Hello, how are you doing? Cameron Heyward, Stephon Tuitt playing 48 snaps against the Colts. And, oh, yeah, the Steelers had a bye before that game as well. You set that up for me. I'll take that matchup there. Now, to your other question. This morning I watched a lot of tape from that Bengals-Titans game. And, you know, it's impressive what they do on offense. I mean, they're more of a power kind of running team. They obviously like to get they like to do some misdirection stuff. They like to use Marcus Mariota around the edge at time. That ankle looks a little bit better with him. He escaped one time around the left end for some huge yardage, and Pac-Man Jones didn't know do I take the pitch guy? Do I not take the pitch guy? He's out there in no man's land, and Mariota scoots on down the sideline for a big gain. What they run a lot of stuff that the Steelers run, to be quite honest with you. They use some multiple tight end sets. I do like how they use a little bit more play action and that's one thing we didn't talk about talking about the Steelers offense. I would like to see more play action out of Ben Roethlisberger. Is it something that he just doesn't like to turn his back or something along those lines? Okay, I get it, but you can still do that from a shotgun with a sidecar and not turn your back at all. So I like the way they use play action. I like sometimes how they, you know, how they get Mariota in a rhythm off of play action on a quick slant to a wide receiver. Something else they do that one play in really that I just watched right before you and I got on, I think it was first quarter, early second quarter, they run an RPO, okay, where you see the bubble screen on the side, you see the potential handoff, and then they have, I think it was Rishard Matthews out of the slot running right down the seam, okay. What they did on that one is they had another wide receiver, I think orbit motion behind Mariota. He fakes the handoff to him. He fakes the quick bubble screen out to the side, and then boy, everybody bites, and Rishard Matthews is running down the seam wide open, and Mariota hits him right in stride. Guess what Matthews does?
Drops it.
He drops it. All that setup and he drops it. But go try to find that play. And if you, I mean, even in the regular game tape, tell me if that when I understand what people maybe say, creativity and that kind of stuff. And look, a lot of people, based on what the Patriots, the way the Patriots dismantled the Broncos the other night, the focus is back on motion and using motions and all like that. Sure, I mean, they could do a little bit more of that. But, A, how much of that does Ben Roethlisberger really want to do, you know? How much say does Ben have when he sits down with Todd Haley of what he would like to do and how many different wrinkles that he wants to have to keep up with? Those are questions that, you know, we don't know answers to there. But I like what they do offensively. I think, though, if you stop that run first and foremost with Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray, I think you're in good shape when it comes to stopping that offense. Defensively, boy, you were a big fan of Adoree Jackson, I think, before the draft this year.
I was.
That kid's fun to watch, and you know, they're able to play. You know, they're doing some things. Dick LeBeau's doing some things on defense that Steeler fans wish he would have done in Pittsburgh. But the reason is he has the cornerbacks that can do it. he can play a little bit more man there. And I think one of the things we'll ask our beat writer about this as well, too. I haven't looked at the stats on this. I was impressed with the way their secondary tackles okay? It just, you know, Dick LeBeau's big on what? Tackle the catch. And tackle the ball carry. You know, don't, you know, those kind of principles. To me, and, you know, once again, I haven't notated the whole season for them, but at first glance at that Bengals film, that's what stuck out to me is, boy, that secondary sure does tackle well. And then I noticed how much it seemed like they're playing a little bit more man with Dick LeBeau as well too. So yeah, they're what, a 6-3 team. They've lost some games. I think two of their losses have actually came on the road this year. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how they're able to play on the road against a good Steelers defense. And make no mistake, both these defenses, David, are probably two of the top five third down defenses in the league. However, both of these offenses are not overly great when it comes to converting third down. So I don't know. Maybe the team maybe the first team that converts five third downs in this game wins the game.
Okay. It is going to be fun to watch. Like I say, look, they do some things. Mariota is a capable quarterback who, you know, I don't know that he's taken the leap to be a top 10 guy that we will consider that, but he's certainly been a relatively capable quarterback with a good running game. We'll see how Conklin does on that right side with Tuitt. See if Tuitt and Dupree can do some things on the right side. I think on the left side they've got as good as they come. So they get a solid line. They get Corey Davis back. I'm curious to see. This might be one of those games where the Steelers offense needs to score 27 points to win this game, because I kind of expect Tennessee to score some points.
You know, they're not. They can run the football. I mean, we know that. And the Steelers, you know, David, believe it or not, you have to go back to the Leonard Fournette run, that touchdown run late in that game, to find the last time that the Steelers gave up an explosive run. Okay, this is still a team. If you look at the statistics, though, at yards per carry, you say, "Oh man, they still kind of you know, not great." But it's that, in my opinion, that they still haven't caught up to counterbalancing those 6-7 huge runs that they gave up early in the season. Here's something to keep in mind here too. The Titans, according to my research, I think only have 9. As good of a running team as they've been, David, you're going to get a kick out of this. Inside the stats, I think they have 9 runs of 20 yards or more. Marcus Mariota has 2 of those. Derrick Henry has 3 of those. DeMarco Murray has 2 of those. Any idea who the player with the other 2 is?
No.
Dory Jackson.
Oh yeah, there you go. I know. He's gotten a couple opportunities.
So that's something to, and that stuck out in this game against the Bengals. In fact, I think in the second quarter, in a 2nd and 4, he went around left end for 20 yards. So that's another wrinkle that you have to concern yourself with there. So look, this is a power team, as I said. They'll try to bludgeon you with that run. You can't let them have an explosive run. We've talked about that all year, that drives that opposition have explosive runs against the Steelers, let alone explosive passing plays. But explosive runs in general end in touchdowns for some reason against the Steelers. So if you keep those guys bottled up, and in fact, two of those 9 explosive runs that they have this year are kind of – out of what we like to say, the mean or the medium or whatnot, 75 by DeMarco Murray and 72 by Derrick Henry. Those are some huge runs. One came against the Colts a few weeks ago, and the other against the Seahawks. So there you go.
All right, Dave, let's get into the Titans. Again, Thursday night game, we'll have this will be our full and exclusive preview here with our buddy David Beauclair coming up next. Okay, as mentioned, we're short week, and as usual, we're going to have a beat writer covering the Steelers' opponent, of course, the Steelers, and the Tennessee Titans kick off tomorrow night at Heinz Field as the Steelers get ready for a slew of consecutive primetime games. And pleased to be joined by David Beauclair, who covers the Titans. You can follow him on Twitter at Beauclair, B-O-C-L-A-I-R Sports, and it's the NashvillePost.com. You can find his work. David's been with us before. We were thrilled to be able to have him back. David, thanks for joining us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Oh, happy to do it, gentlemen. How are you today?
We're good. Both these teams coming in a bit on a roll. Steeler fans, and certainly in our discussions of the Steelers, the record kind of belies and the underlying unsettledness with kind of the Steelers' performance on the offensive side of the football. But nonetheless, 7-2, and look like a clear path to the AFC North title. This Titans team scares me a bit. Tell me, first of all, just your gut feel. Is this a good – and I ask this because they've been – their net point differentials are negative. You rarely see that with a record like the Titans have. Is this a good Tennessee team?
You know, it is a good team that for the most part has not played particularly well. And right now they're coming into this game with a four-game winning streak, which is their longest win streak since 2009. And they haven't – you know, no one has come out of any one of those four games going, yeah, this is a good team. It's a strange run they're having right now. But I'm a big believer that good teams win when they don't play their best. And I go back to the Titans Super Bowl team in 1999. It was a similar sort of thing. They won three, they lost one. They won three, they lost one. They won three, they lost one. And so, you know, they never got on a great roll. Most of their wins that year, particularly the early ones, were by 6 points or fewer, and everybody kept saying, yeah, but. Then the next thing you know, they're 13-3 and in the playoffs, and they got rolling there. So I think this team sort of mirrors that one in some ways. Not that this team, I'm saying this team's going to the Super Bowl, but I do think there is benefit to getting wins when you don't play your best.
Steeler fans love hearing that because I do think that's an important point. And the Steelers came out with a win against the Colts last week in a game where they really had an abominable offensive first half and did enough to get the win. And yeah, you win those games, it goes a long way to giving you a good spot in the playoffs. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the coaching staff, and Dick LeBeau is still beloved and revered in Pittsburgh. But just overall, with Terry Robiskie as the offensive coordinator and Malarkey, a guy that has been around the league for a long time, this is a veteran coaching staff. Give me your thoughts on them, whether you like what they're doing, and you know, obviously their jobs aren't in jeopardy. Is this a good coaching staff?
It's a good coaching staff. I don't think it has distinguished itself yet. Like folks in Tennessee are thrilled to have Dick LeBeau running the defense, as you would imagine. But they're still kind of waiting to see a defense that sort of dominates games. And you know, I think a big part of that is you don't have a Troy Polamalu here. You don't have a James Harrison. There's good players on this defense, but there's not those guys who just can destroy opponents' game plan. So, maybe the expectations are a little unreal as far as that goes. Robiskie has done a really nice job of sort of playing to his strengths and not trying to do too much when he doesn't have to. Mike Malarkey's guy has a lot to prove still. He, you know, had a terrible record as an NFL head coach coming in here. He still hasn't convinced everybody in terms of his game management and some of his in-game decisions. But he seems to be getting more comfortable. I think early in the year he was coaching, he was feeling sort of the pressure of the expectations and not really trusting that this was a good team. Like, you know, he's trying to make decisions that would win the game in the second and the third quarter rather than just letting it play out. And I think he's becoming more comfortable and trusting his team and that it's going to find a way to win ultimately. So, you know, Terry's still very much out on him.
David, before we got on with you, David and I were talking about the Titans playing 90 offensive snaps against the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday. This, of course, is a short week. Sure, not all the offensive players played 90 snaps, but I think all five offensive linemen did. Marcus Mariota did as well. Now, obviously, I think they're expected to get Quentin Spain back. He obviously didn't play in that game, but four of their offensive linemen going to be coming off of a game with heavy usage. Are we going to be able on Friday, do you think? How much of a factor do you think that's going to play into this game? Are we going to be able to look back on Friday at this game and say, aha, well, yeah, that offense did wear down a little bit?
I think there's the potential for that, certainly. And, you know, there's a question about Mariota late in that game. He scrambled and got tackled kind of hard, landed on his left shoulder, which, of course, is his non-throwing shoulder. But Titans actually had to call a timeout to give him a moment to regroup and gather himself. And he missed time early in the year with a hamstring injury, so he might not be – he might not be at 100% going into this game as it is. I think that's probably a bigger factor than maybe the number of plays, because the Titans do run the ball a lot, and they ran the ball a lot against the Bengals. So, you know, the offensive linemen are inflicting as much punishment as they're absorbing in those cases. I think, this team has been pretty good late in games. I don't think conditioning has been an issue, so I think they'll be okay. And they just had their bye week 2 weeks ago, so they're a little bit fresher from that too.
Boy, when you look at the coaching staff, it's almost like a who's who of Steelers alumni there. And, of course, Russ Grimm, offensive line coach there. I went through the Bengals game just this morning there. It seemed like I saw at least one first half play, some outside zone. The Steelers have had their problems earlier in the year at stopping the outside zone. How much have the Titans been running that this year, especially with a guy like DeMarco Murray? Are we going to see some of that stretch outside zone early and often in Pittsburgh Thursday night?
Yeah, I would think so. Titans haven't done as much of it this year as they did last season, and part of it is teams have defended it very well. But when they've had success, you can go back to the Seattle game, for example. Titans ran the ball very well that day against, you know, what is a good physical defense, much like Pittsburgh always has a good physical defense. And I think the Titans are probably understandably scared of the Pittsburgh offense and want to hang on to the ball as much as they possibly can. And if they can, you know, if they can get up to 80, 90 plays again this week and keep the Steelers offense off the field, that would make them very happy. And a good way to do that is to run the ball early and often, like you said.
Dave, when you talk about what, just the skill position guys, Corey Davis coming back last week, Eric Decker's an interesting guy in terms of, you know, had his big time in Denver and now with the Jets. I mean, just overall skill position, what do you think of the talent they have? I mean, if they were drafting again this year, is that again get more weapons for Mariota?
Yeah, the wide receivers haven't been as good as anybody really wants them to be. Rishard Matthews is the guy nobody talks about, had one of the best seasons by a Titans wide receiver in about 6 or 7 years last year, is doing even better this year. Decker is still sort of, he seems to be trying to find what his role is. He's a slot guy on a team that relies much more on the tight ends than it does slot receivers. So I think he feels a little bit underused right now and hasn't been the red zone weapon that everybody expected him to be. Corey Davis has had spectacular moments in limited playing time because he missed a big chunk with a hamstring injury of his own. He's a guy I think everybody feels like is going to make this offense really good, but this season has sort of become a, you know, whatever we get out of him, we get out of him, we'll be happy with it and trust that better days are ahead. And the other thing they've done the last two games is they put their other first-round pick cornerback Dory Jackson in on offense, and he had a 20-yard run against the Colts. He had a 20-yard run against the Bengals, and then was on the field for a couple more plays on offense against the Bengals. So I mean, clearly, even the coaches look at it and they say they need more dynamic type plays, and a guy from the defense is the one who's providing it right now.
Yeah, I love Adoree Jackson and the stuff he did at USC. Big fan. I know, you know, size was the issue with him and what he was going to be able to do. And I'm sure we'll get to him on the defensive side of the ball. Just tell me about one more guy, and I'm not even sure I'm going to say his name right, Taywan Taylor. I have to tell you, I know he went in the third round. I don't even remember this guy looking, you know, doing our draft stuff and all our previews and everything I did for the Steelers for the coverage. And Dave maybe remembers him, but Western Kentucky third round pick, who is he and what is he?
He's a guy put up huge numbers in college for one of those offenses that throws it 45, 50 times every game. The expectation was that he was going to be the slot receiver. You know, Corey Davis was going to be the X, and Rashard Matthews was the Y, and here they go. But Taylor he's small, but he is fast, and he has done some good work on the outside, and operating actually as a deep threat. And I'm trying to remember what game it was earlier in the year. Caught a long pass where he just ran by everybody. He still has things he needs to learn in terms of the NFL route combinations and things. So he doesn't get as much action that way. But they've also used him sort of as a Tyreek Hill, if you will, where they'll hand the ball to him on jet sweep, or they'll throw the bubble screens to him and those sorts of things. So he's a guy they feel like can do a lot of different things for them, and I think they're still trying to figure it all out with him.
Yeah, when you flip over to the defensive side of the ball, as David said, boy, you look at that secondary. I tell you what I marvel the most about looking at the tape is Dick LeBeau's doing some things there with his corners that a lot of Steeler fans wish he would have done during his final years with the Steelers, and that was the fact that we see him, it looks like he's playing a little bit more man coverage, and really that's because you can do that with guys like Logan Ryan and Adoree Jackson, whereas in Pittsburgh you really didn't have more so man corners. But Kevin Byard, I looked at that guy a lot during the draft, and when the Steelers didn't draft him, I was not surprised that the Titans did. That guy's probably the most underrated free safety in the league. I tell you, David, one thing that stuck out to me on the Bengals game alone was it looks like this secondary doesn't miss many tackles. It just looks like they're able to, and Dick LeBeau is a big proponent of tackle the catch, tackle the catch, tackle the catch. It looks like they're doing it, at least in that game. What is your overarching thoughts on the amount of man that they're playing this year, and is my assessment right on this secondary being a good tackling secondary?
Yeah, it's a unit that was terrible, quite honestly, last year. And week one of this year, The four primary positions, the two cornerbacks, the two safeties, four different starters as opposed to week one from last season. They added Adoree Jackson through the draft. They added Logan Ryan in free agency. They added Jonathan Cyprian in free agency. And Kevin Byard in his second year was not a starter right from the outset last year as a rookie. But so it's a group that obviously you would expect needed some time and is starting to play much better right now. And what you're talking about with the man-to-man coverage, we're seeing more and more of that. And a lot of that is because Logan Ryan has started to play much, much better. He had some issues early in the season and really has settled in now. His last two games, I think, by far have been his best. And Adoree Jackson, like you would expect from a rookie, he's given up some plays, but he's exactly what you want in a cornerback. He is cocky. He is fearless. When he gets beat, he doesn't care. He comes back and he makes the next two or three plays, without hesitation. They have done a good job. I mean, teams complete passes against this Titans defense more than you would like in terms of the opponent's completion percentage and whatnot. But they're getting guys to the ground and forcing teams to try and drive the field and keep making first downs against them. And it's, now that being said, in the last, five or six games, the Titans have played the Browns, they played the Dolphins, they played the Ravens, they played the Bengals, they played the Colts. They are all among the worst offenses in the league. And I think everybody in town here is sort of looking at this game and saying, you know, gosh, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, we're going to find out what this defense is about once and for all in this game on Thursday night.
Yeah, when you look at that, when you look at that front there, to me, tell me how you attack this thing. I would think that the Steelers want to run some power against it on the run with Le'Veon Bell, and then additionally, you go back and I think one play that really stuck out was that touchdown to LaFell in that game against the Bengals. There, it seems like that, you know, if they want to play those two safeties back, perhaps maybe getting the split on those safeties in the middle of the field, something the Steelers really haven't done a lot offensively, attacking more than, you know, 15 yards down the middle of the field. Is that the way you would suggest attacking that defense?
Yeah, well, I'll say this. Jonathan Cyprien has been exactly what he was advertised to be when he came in from Jacksonville, which is, you know, a guy who hits hard but is not the best in pass coverage. So when Cyprien's playing deep, there is opportunity to get the ball deep to his side of the field. He, it's just quite simply not his strong suit. Now, Byard, who we mentioned earlier, Byard's one of those guys, you know, probably a lot of people didn't hear of him in college, played just down the road at Middle Tennessee State, but in his career had 19 interceptions, had, you know, at least a couple interceptions every year, as many as 6 in one season. I mean, he's just one of those guys who is always, always around the ball, and it just seems to find him. Of course, you know, had 5 interceptions in a 2-game span just a couple of weeks ago here, and, you know, finally starting to do the same types of things here in the pros. So he's a guy that offenses are going to start really kind of noticing and being aware of where he is. And the Titans, you know, Cyprien is a strong safety, Byard is a free safety, but the Titans will interchange them, and you know, Byard can come down to the line of scrimmage and make some tackles too. So, you know, when they give the one high look with Cyprien back, then I think there's a real opportunity to go down the field like Steelers like to do.
David, you mentioned playmakers both on offense and defense, and, you know, maybe some of these young guys are starting to bring some of that. When you look at the front seven, again, they're pedigree names that Steelers fans are going to be aware of, and Jarrell Casey and Derek Moore, Brian Arapco we've seen around. In that front seven, is there a standout player amongst that group?
You know, the remarkable story this year is inside linebacker Wesley Woodyard, who the last couple of years he's been here, he's always kind of gotten off to a slow start, and he's lost his starting job to somebody, or, you know, either early in the year or even in training camp last year. But for a 10, 11, 12-year veteran, he keeps he's never pouted. He keeps working, and by the end of the season, he's back on the field in situations and being productive. And something has happened this year where he was dynamite all throughout the preseason. He has been sensational through the regular season, has more than 100 tackles already. And I mean, big tackles, like tackles on fourth down late in games to sort of seal a victory and just really kind of, you know, a guy who's playing much, much younger than his years right now. And he has sort of been a catalyst for a lot of the success on the defense right now. And unexpectedly so. I mean, like I say, the Titans have always known he's a hard worker. He's a guy who's a team captain every year. So, you know, he's a good guy, but suddenly has been just remarkably productive in a way that has given everybody else a little more confidence.
We've seen the Titans on television a few times, and they talk about Ryan Succop, you know, never missing anymore from inside 50, I guess it is. Is that his streak? Steeler fans will never.
It actually ended against the Bengals last week. Yeah, it was 56 straight from inside of 50 before he missed one from 47 last Sunday.
Steelers fans will never remember 3 or 4 years ago with the Chiefs when he missed against the Chargers that cost them a playoff spot. Not that they deserved it at 8-8, but special teams, I assume, a pretty solid group, right?
Yeah, well, and you know, it's as good as Succop has been with that streak. Honestly, punter Brett Kern has been even better. The guy, I can't remember the last time I saw a punter really seem to just know exactly what the situation needs. And, you know, whether he bombs one 67 yards like he did Sunday against the Bengals, in a situation where the Titans were backed up a little bit, or dropping punts down inside the 20. He seems to be able to do whatever he wants with the ball right now, and it's another one of those guys who has been an underrated factor in their success. And then we go back to Adoree Jackson. He's the primary return man for kickoffs and punts, and for the first time probably since the early 2000s, when Derek Mason was back there, and even then, I don't think it was the same level of electricity. Like, people, you can just feel it in the stadium when Jackson catches the ball during home games. Like, people think this is it; he's going to the house. Now he's taken two punts back for touchdowns. They've both been negated by penalties, but you could see just the speed and the explosiveness and whatnot. And he's gonna take one back on somebody that's gonna count this year. The Titans just hope it's a game changer when it does happen.
I'm worried about the result here, David. I got to be honest with you, Dave and I. You know, short week, haven't had a chance to talk about a lot. What do the Titans have to do to win? And give us a prediction, if you would.
Titans have to keep it low scoring. They need to sort of run the ball and control the clock. If this turns into a trap meet with the Steelers, I don't think they have any chance, particularly in Pittsburgh. I think it's a bad, bad spot for the Titans. Like I said, I think this is a good team that hasn't played well and has won because it hasn't played much good competition. I think this is one of those games where the Titans probably get their teeth kicked in a little bit and are better because of it. You know, the Steelers are going to sort of show them this is the level you have to be if you want to be a playoff team in the NFL. So I think a prime time game in Pittsburgh, honestly, I'm looking at, 34-17 Pittsburgh maybe.
Well, I got to tell you, man, awesome stuff. I appreciate it. I know the schedule was a little difficult this week, but I appreciate you making time for us. As I mentioned, Dave and I have talked about your guest appearance last time, and our listeners loved it. So thanks for being with us again. Maybe we'll get to see you down the road in the playoffs. Who knows? I mean, it's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm always happy. Give me a call anytime.
Okay, good stuff, Dave. From David, we tripled up on the three Daves again. Apologize. We apologize a little bit. I know the audio wasn't perfect. He was kind of cutting in and out a little, but he came straight from the dental chair to have, eventually a teeth removed that they thought was going to be a crown, a filling. They decided to yank it out. So he was playing hurt.
Yeah, and I don't know, that prediction that he gave, he has a lot of confidence in this Steelers offense, doesn't he?
He hasn't heard enough about the 30-point number, clearly.
Yeah, he must not know how much Todd Haley hates Ben Roethlisberger, how Todd Haley's trying to sabotage Ben Roethlisberger and all those going on. These are two decent teams going to get together. I think the defenses are really going to set the tone in this game. Once again, David, I'm going for the 30. The Steelers are going to have to score 31 times for me to start predicting that they're going to score 30. What do you want to use on this? 6.5? What?
Sure, whatever you want.
I think it opened at 7. I haven't looked at it lately. But let's use 6.5 Steelers by 6.5. Cause I think by kickoff, it's probably going to get down to look. Why would you take the Steelers to cover a big number right now anyway? So I think the Steelers win this one. I think they win it at home. I do not think they're going to score 30 points. I think, the first one that score, I think if you can, convert 5 third downs in this game, that might be big, as well. I think we will be able to talk on Friday about maybe the Titans offense wearing down a little quick in this game. That might be the difference in this one as well. David, I didn't want to use 7 because I have this game ending in a 7-point difference. I have the Steelers winning this one 23-16.
You know, Dave, when these games are like this and a lot of people are down on the Steelers, when it comes to game time, I often get a feeling that the Steelers are going to win and win big and win impressively. It happened with the Bengals game. I think I predicted a 4-point win, but kind of game time, I went with over and the Steelers blowing them out. Hopefully I'll feel that way tomorrow night, but right now I don't feel that way. And again, this Titans offense worries me a little bit more than maybe it should, but just kind of going on how I feel about the things, I'll take the Steelers 24-23, and I'll give you an update at 8 o'clock on Thursday on my Twitter feed. But right now I expect this to be a very close game and one that's got me a little bit unsettled.
You think we see a special team score in this game?
Well, the obvious answer is no. And if I were going to say yes, I wouldn't put it for the Steelers unless they could block a punt.
Yeah. I think he's David Beauclair is on point saying Dory's going to take one back soon. You just wonder.
Right. You know, hopefully not this soon.
Yeah. Look, if there was a week, this might be it on a short week too, right? So watch for that. We didn't talk a lot about the special teams, obviously, but we'll see. And the Steelers have had you know, a little bit issues at times. All right, David, one of these weeks we're going to turn one of these shows into a two-hour show. I can feel it. But in the meantime, I guess we should cut this one short and get it posted so people can listen to by the time kickoff rolls around. As usual, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We'll have a lot to talk about, probably both games, the Colts game and the Titans game, all next week because we'll have a little bit of extra time to go back through all the tape of both games again as well. If you like what we do, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. And David, here's to us talking about another Steelers win on Friday.
Yeah, we'll be getting at it Friday for you with the full recap. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast. Enjoy the game with Dave and Dave.